Okay, so my name is Gary Averback, and I'm here interviewing Harry Hammer at the Parrott Center, the Jewish Museum and Archives Office at the Parrott Center, and today's date is July 18th, 2013. So let's just get a little, we're going to start off with your background information. So your name in English is?
What, the first name?
Yeah.
Harry.
It was always Harry, it wasn't?
Yeah.
Okay. And in Hebrew?
The Hebrew name is Chaim.
C-H-A-I-M?
Well, that's what I'm told, yes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. Chaim Ben...
Meir. M-A-Y-E-R.
Chaim Ben Meir.
Yeah.
And your birth date?
August the 30th, 1932.
And it was in Vancouver?
In Vancouver, yeah.
And you have two brothers.
Two brothers is correct.
Okay, both younger.
Yeah.
There's Usher.
U-S-H-E-R.
And he was born when?
In Vancouver.
What year?
Oh, he was born, I'm born, 1932. He had to be 34. It's 4 years difference, isn't there?
So, yeah.
Yeah,
so
36 then.
Okay.
19. And David is 1940.
And David.
Yeah.
1940. Now, trying going back as far as you remember, do you know anything about your parents' grandparents? How about your grandparents?
No. Never knew them because they never made it.
They never made it.
Never made it out of Europe.
Okay. Now, obviously, I know something about the family because it's, you know, so they were also from Poland.
Poland. My father was from Poland. Oh, I understand. No, Lodz.
Yeah.
The town, the city was Lodz.
That was your father?
That was my father.
Your father was Max.
Max. Max Meyer. Meyer first, and Max in brackets, that's what they called him, I hear.
Yeah.
Meyer, Max.
Okay. And he came from what? He came from where in Poland?
He came from Lodz. L-O-D... See, Lodz. L-O-D-G-E.
No, I think it's Z. L-O-D-Z.
Well, see, I said, depending on the passport.
Yeah, but I think there's Lodz, Poland.
Yeah.
And so what year did he come here?
I sure have the passport. He came here when he was 21.
21, so what year would that be?
He was born in 1901.
So, 1922. Yeah. So he arrived in 1922?
Yeah. He was here when he was 21.
Okay. And we'll come to what he did today. Your mother?
My mother comes from, her name was Rita, R-I-T-T-A.
Well, wait a second.
Okay.
It's good to hear.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so let me just get to it. Okay. Father Meyer. Nice. Do you have any recollection of what the name was before they came to Canada? In Europe? Like in Poland? It wasn't Hammer. It would probably be some...
No, it was Hammer.
It was Hammer.
Yeah. They tried to change it to Halifax. He wouldn't go for it.
No, Hammer's an easy name. I don't know why.
No, he wouldn't. No, the interpreter, when he landed at Halifax, wanted to change it to a French name. It sounded better. My father says, no, this is our name, and this is the name. That's it.
Okay, and what year did he die?
1992. June the 24th.
Okay. His education, now I know that he was involved...
Just public school.
Just public school.
That's all. And I don't think he...
And that would be in Poland.
Yeah.
And his means of livelihood were...
He was a junk peddler. That's what he wanted to go by. A junk peddler.
Although later on he...
Well, later on he did deliveries for Bella, you know, for Bella, collecting, delivering meat and collecting the outstanding debts.
And his special talents or interests?
His main interests were just family life.
But he, as I recall, he was also in the Hever Kadisha.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, at the Sheret Center.
And so he was very involved with the synagogue.
Yeah. But no outside sports or anything, really, to speak of.
Okay. So, just in a few words, describe your father, his personality, his values, the kind of person he was.
Well, always straight. He was always straightforward. Straightforward. And he would listen to a lie that you would tell him. Then look you straight in the eye. No, you're not telling him the truth. As a kid,
I always remember him as being a very strong...
Well, he was strong in nature, strong-minded.
But strong physically. He seemed to be like a...
Stark.
Yeah.
He was stark. Okay,
yeah.
Because that's his build. That's his build.
Yeah, you know, even late in life, it wasn't... Yeah.
But early in life, he was extremely strong. This gentleman did not know his own strength. And I can tell you why he... We went out and bought a car for him, a 1969 Valiant, after he retired from the junk business.
Yeah.
And they had a handbrake. And he went to put on the handbrake. And we had already taken the car out of the lot. And he went to put on the handbrake, and he pulled the goddamn handbrake, but it broke right out.
Yeah. The fact that I recall about him was, you know, his...
He didn't know his own strength.
But I recall, you know, he wasn't. He didn't talk. He didn't talk a lot.
He listened. And if he didn't agree with you, even with a rabbi, I can remember at shul, at the Sheret Tzedek, when the rabbis made their speech, it's mostly the peddlers who sat together. The Hever Kadisha.
Yeah.
They would stand up and say, it's not right. Most of these men, I think, were self-taught in Europe. And these rabbis were here, locally born, or let's say, they did not have the depth like these gentlemen had. Okay? And they didn't go to school. But what they learned from their parents... I guess their grandparents in Europe was far deeper than the rabbis learned here. And they were always correcting the rabbis. The rabbi didn't like it. I can remember that. And they're standing up. You're not right. Or you missed half a page. Definite. Right?
Yeah.
And the rabbi used to say, it was in Yiddish.
Yeah.
Are you an expert? The man stood up, says, I am, and I can tell you further. You know, so these were the things that I remember my father and the other peddlers. Because we used to sit there with a Hever Kadisha, because they gave my father a seat.
Yeah.
Okay, so myself and my brother. And I remember arguing with the rabbis. And I don't know who was right and I don't know who was wrong.
You will.
But the thing is, what I found out from my father, different yeshivas there, in where he comes from, the interpretation was different. Because there were different sects of the Hasidim at that time.
Yeah, the Babich.
Yeah, he belonged to the Eglizenda group, which is a rebellious group.
What is it? What is it, that branch? Because I'll spell that.
They were called the Alexandria Group.
Alex.
Yeah, Alexandra, R-A, Alexandria, R-I-A. Because when the rabbi gave the sermon from my father, he said, this is the group that my father had belonged to, or his family had belonged to in Lodz. Because they had a different viewpoint.
Okay, so I guess that would be Jewish spiritual.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, a different view, and they would contradict some of the things that the rabbi would say. Because they saw his group that they were involved in, this is one teaching, this is another, you know, different teaching from different rabbis. It's not all the same.
Did he ever talk much about his life in Europe?
No, he didn't. Not much, but he did tell me that their father was a baker in Poland, and my father had to carry 20 kilos, sacks of flour, which is like over 40 some odd pounds,
yeah,
up these stairs. It's like a silo, and they opened the door and they poured the flour in for the bakers. That's what he had to do, because he was the strongest one in the family.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Because Uncle Joe was already in Vancouver, and Uncle Ed was already in Vancouver.
So did they bring...
They came earlier.
Yeah, how much earlier?
Yeah.
What, before the war? Or,
oh, yeah, they came way before the war. So did my father.
No, you said your father came around
1921. No, before the Second World War.
No, I'm talking about the First World War.
Oh.
You know,
The First World War in 1914, 1918. Yeah. My father came after the First World War.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were already here.
Okay, so that's Joe and Ed?
Yeah, Joe and Ed.
And they basically had Hammer's Bakery.
No. Hammer's Bakery came from another brother who survived the concentration camps, Leon. Leon Hammer.
Oh.
That's another brother. And... my father and Uncle Ed and Uncle Joe used to send $50 in American in those days to the Swedish UNRWA camp. That was the refugee camp after the war, in order to maintain a livelihood for the survivor.
Yeah.
Okay, so they knew that they knew that Uncle Leon survived the one camp.
Yeah.
But over the time, they feared that his wife had passed away. So Uncle Leon made an application, I believe, from what I can understand, made an application to come to Vancouver. And you know, the Swedish UNRWA camps, they were in different locations, and they did cross the numbers, cross, you know, finally, click. His wife Lola survived.
I remember Lola Hammer, yeah.
Yeah, well, his wife Lola survived, but the two children didn't make it. They had two children. Okay, they did make it. So Uncle Leon and Lola had to get together to come to Canada. And I can remember him coming to Canada. We went down to the CPR station, and we expected to see a man, you know how you schlep.
Yeah.
Well, here walks this man off the train. My gosh. Unbelievable. Beautifully dressed. Okay. So for somebody who survived the camps, I mean, he survived the camps. His wits kept him through. But for somebody to walk off the train with a nice coat.
What year was that? Hmm?
Now, I don't remember the year. I don't remember the year he came here. But he came here with Lola. He was dressed like an esquire.
Maybe he put the $50 in.
Okay. So my father didn't take too good to that. Sort of a little spark going on, you know. The brothers were sparking. We sent $50... to the American money in those days to Europe, but through the UNRWA, through the Swedish, whatever.
Yeah.
And And here comes a guy looking like $1 million. So Shove, when Shove come to push, and anyway, they talk, and they somehow my father got together with Leon and Uncle Joe and Uncle Ed, and they told my father, "We're going to, how would you like to go in the bakery business? It's a lot better than the junk business." Well, my father hemmed and hawed. Oh, well, I'd give it a try. So that's where the Open Hammers Bakery on Oak Street.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't take long for my father to disagree for some reason, and it only lasted very, very short time in a split, like that. Then my father says, "Don't talk to him anymore." My father did a Kaddish, and that was it.
No, and I know there was no communication.
No communication with him. My other uncles, finished.
So you never really had any contact with them after
that? My father told me, "Listen, children, they're your uncles and aunts. You can go visit them, talk to them, but I don't want nothing to do with them." I gave in once. I'm not going to give in again. So that was the end.
Okay, so we'll come back to these stories.
Yeah.
Now, let's get to your mother, Rita.
Yeah, Ritta. Now, I don't know if she had a second name. I never heard it, but her last name was Helprin.
And she was called Rivel.
Well, they called her Rivel or Rivka, depending who you were.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she was born
in Gunyans. Now, don't ask me how. It's on her passport.
Gunyan.
Yeah, Gunyan.
It's also Poland.
In Poland.
Yeah, because I know that she was Diane's aunt.
Yeah.
A great aunt, actually, because she was.
Well, Bella was her cousin.
Was her niece.
Niece, yeah.
Yeah.
Bella and my mother lived together or slept together in Europe or something.
Yeah, there was only about 9 years difference between them.
Yeah.
So Bella was born in 1918, so your mother would have been born in 1910. Yeah, so
1910.
And she died.
She died in 1997. July the 17th.
And she just had public school.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was public school or Hebrew school or Jewish school where she went.
When we say public school, we're talking about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those days, a lot of kids didn't have an opportunity to go to a Christian school or whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, in the shtetls, I'm sure they had, like, you know.
Yeah.
But, okay, now this part, I know that later on she worked in the family business, you know, the butcher shop. But did she work outside the home while you were growing up?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, so not while you were growing up.
No, never worked outside the home. Matter of fact, she used to make the kishka for the Sher Tzedek.
Yeah, I remember her kishka was legendary.
Until the law came in and said, you can't make it from your house anymore, you got to do it in the shul. Or somebody came up with a thing like that. Anyway, she used to make kishka for the shul.
Yeah.
And for parties that
and
were
And also
held.
For the, yeah, for yeah. the main kosher.
Yeah.
Her talents, she did kushya. What about any special interests that she had?
She had pioneer women. She was in pioneer women for a long time. And also in the shul, involved in the shul at that time. The pioneer women was from the shul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my grandmother, Romansky, belonged to the pioneer women.
Yeah, yeah.
All the ladies that came, you know, in the early days.
That's right.
They became pioneer women.
Oh, wait a minute. She was a good, yeah. Oh, wait. Is this when she came to Vancouver?
Yeah.
Oh, when she came to Vancouver, Mr. Sam Tenenbaum, who is my godfather, Aaron's father, hired my mother to be a seamstress at his factory. That's how he became my grandfather.
Because okay. She would have just been a teenager then.
Yeah, she was 17.
Yeah, I see. I know most of the man Halpern family. Yeah. They came in the mid-20s. I know that Bella came. Bella and her parents came in 1924.
Yeah, okay.
I still have the entry.
Yeah, sure.
So,
yeah.
You know, I would assume that they all came around
the
same
time.
They were brought in by Louis Mann, whose name was Sushnovitz, but they changed it to Mann.
Well, that's on Rochelle's side.
But it's still...
It's still on this side a little.
But because she was really, you know, she was a sister of... What was her, Bella's mother's name?
I know who you mean. Al. Oh, Max.
No, her sister.
Oh,
Bella's sister's name, you know, who was Bella's mother. It'll come to you, but...
You mean on the Goldstein side?
Yeah. Well, Goldstein, you know, Goldstein.
There
is a picture, which you've probably seen, where you're in it and Phil, and it's around Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
In about 1938.
Okay.
And there's Halperns in there.
Yes.
There's Arkey there.
Yes.
And there's, and Rivel's there with Usher. She's holding Usher.
Yeah, she's
and
holding
you're,
Usher.
And you're next to...
To Benny.
No,
or
you,
Philip.
You,
or somebody.
To Philip.
Yeah.
And they had to change to think as Philip made a funny face.
Yeah.
But you were
sitting...
And
there was somebody else there, you said, eh?
Oh, yeah, the whole family. Have you not seen that picture?
No.
Oh, well
that's okay.
I'll show it to you.
See, we never got many pictures.
But that picture
okay.
was basically the Schwartz family.
I've got the Schwartz family and the Halperns and the Kurtzes.
Yeah, and the Kurtzes
and the Hammers.
Yeah, there was the Kurtzes, there was Arkey.
Yeah,
and
Gittel.
And Gittel.
And Harry and Bertha.
Yeah,
not Bertha.
No, just Harry.
Not Harry.
He hadn't met Bertha yet.
That's right.
And there was. What's her name? Lon.
Jenny.
Jenny.
Frida.
Frida was there.
The youngest one.
Yeah, Frida, Phil. Yeah, so it was
Jenny
about 1938.
Yeah. Okay.
I extrapolate 38, 39.
Okay. So, it doesn't. Really
but so it does show the whole family.
Yeah. Okay.
And we'll. You know, use that in the thing. So, do you remember any stories she told you about when you were growing up? About
her father was a Schoeffert. Not only was he a Schoeffert, he was also not a rabbi, but he was very, very well learned. Okay, this gentleman taught my mother how to daven. My mother knew more than my father about davening.
Really?
More than my father. But she never let on she knew more than my father. Because, you know, you don't want to say very much because the man is the head of the house and you can't come out. But she would correct them. And they would get into little spits and spats, you know. But anyway, yeah, she was very well knowledgeable in Hebraic. Laws, and being my my grandfather, I sure heard his endeavor, believe it or not, was trying to make a chazer kosher. That was his endeavor.
He apparently didn't succeed.
No. Very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Okay, now not only that, they were situated here. And he was a tax collector at the same time.
In Poland.
Yeah, well, in Gonyans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what he did is there was a bridge. The cattle would come across the bridge. Okay. Now, for some reason, they knew how much weight there was coming across the bridge. The farmer would take the cattle out in the morning, go eat God knows where, and bring the cattle back. Now, the cattle are fed. They're heavy. They walk across the bridge. They show the difference of the weight. So the farmer had to pay
tax
on the weight. Yeah. Because you had to pay the local official. who came and collect the money. Everything was taxed.
And that was your grandfather?
My grandfather had to pay. Well, he was, in other words, he was selected to do this. And it's not a job that they had a choice. He had no choice. This is what we want you to do. Since you are situated right at a good area, we want you to collect the zlotys for the weight of the cattle going back over the bridge. So, you know, it amounted to the money, and that had to be paid to the mayor of the city, the mayor of the town. Now, the mayor, my father, my mother used to say, used to come in an old car, park in front of the where he was, and set out a table, and her father had to come out with a book, a ledger, a little thing with money, and the guy used to take paper and write it down. The gentleman gave a receipt for the amount of money, but now whether it's the right amount, you never question it. That was it. Car go back. Everything was paid for.
So that was a sideline, but it was not a voluntary sideline.
No. You had no choice.
I do remember your mother as being, and probably deliberately, not accidentally, being very, very funny. You know, she could tell a story. She could tell a story, and it could even be a not a happy story.
The thing is, my mother, my father never liked to talk about anything, so I don't think he had a happy life at home. My mother was quite different. There were three boys in the family. My mother always wanted a girl. Didn't work out that way. But for some reason, my mother always...
Should have traded places with her brother, Archie.
Well, that's another story. But I guess I was token daughter. My mother would confide in me in things that she wouldn't talk to my brothers with, but she would confide in me. Her and I were quite close. I understood her. She understood me. I knew what she was thinking before she even spoke to me. Though she used to reprimand me quite a bit, okay, if I stepped out of line. Or if I tried to tell her a story and she knew I was lying, okay? And I used to cover the truth sometimes. And she used to catch me. She said, "Don't do that no more. I know what you, I can tell by your eyes that you're not telling me the truth." Yeah, no, she was quite fair. She demanded respect. You know, you couldn't fool her.
I have very fond memories of your mother. So how did your parents meet?
Big friend?
How did your parents meet?
To be honest with you, I don't even know. My mother went out with a few men, not that many men, but one or two men in Vancouver, and she wasn't happy with it. For some unknown reason, I don't know who was the matchmaker, but my father took a shine to my mother. And my mother took a shine to my father because my father wasn't too swift. He didn't have any experience with women. But the two guys that my mother told me who tried to get into her trousers, okay, she nixed them right away. Okay, and she told me who they were. Well, they were respectable men. I mean, they were young in those days. They were dashing. Handsome, here a couple of immigrants coming into Vancouver. What do they know? 90% are virgins.
Yeah.
You know, these are the things. Well, she didn't name them. And out of respect to both gentlemen, I won't disclose the names, but these are things my mother told me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but wouldn't tell my other brothers because they wouldn't even, maybe at that time they couldn't understand it. But when she told me, I said, "Mom, it's only now." She knew.
Yeah.
I mean, she knew. But she liked my father because my father was very slow that way.
Yeah, shy. So.
right?
You mean shies?
Shy.
Yeah.
So what the surprising thing, I was born the first year they were married.
And which, so that would be 31, 32?
1932. They were married in 1930. I was born in 1932. So that's how shy my father was, you see.
Yeah, well, you know, work fast.
Well, that's the story. Yeah. That's the story.
Where did your parents live at first?
Oh.
The first home.
First home. Gosh, that was it. Okay. I was born in the Jackson Apartments.
Which
in
was?
In the East End of Vancouver. Yeah. So it has to be there.
Okay. But where are the Jackson Apartments?
Oh, gosh. Jackson Apartments. I'd have to go down to get the address. Or maybe it's still in the computer. I don't know. Jackson Apartments used to be across the street from Broverman. Mr. Broverman used to sit in that big Chesterfield chair outside. That was his patio furniture on the front veranda. Well, I was a toddler then, but I remember I was there a couple of years, old enough. When I went downstairs, he would be sitting on this armchair, Mr. Broverman, big man. I don't know if he had a big cigar in his mouth, but he used to sit in the armchair looking across the street. Then we moved next door to the Hungarian, which is 600 block Georgia. It was run by the Marin family.
Marin is?
Joe Marin, Cy Marin. Mm-hmm. No, let's see. There's another, that's another gentleman, nice white beard. Long, gray, you know, hair our color. He used to sit in his chair. My mother used to schlep me there. We lived right next door. My father had just rented, I think it was for $7 a month, I don't know, but the main floor. It was a big rooming house. We lived on the main floor there. And the Hungarian was just to the left. We were facing north, so it was just to the left. And I remember my mother in my hand grabbing me, and we walk in getting herring. DeVille's herring, schlep away from the barrel. You have to stick your hand in the barrel and pull out the herring. Stump like a... Okay, that was Hungarian. Across the street was the Scheuchert. That's the butcher shop. Then we moved from there down to 843 Georgia Street, just before Campbell Avenue. So that's there. I think we lived a little while with the Kurtz family on Union Street.
It was all in that same area around the Strathcona
area. The Halperns lived just as you walk into the Kurtz's. They were on the north side of the street. They were just a few houses down, the Harry Halpern, Archie.
Yeah.
Okay, he was just a few houses down from the Kurtz's.
Yeah. So you were all within walking distance.
Philip, I don't know. Philip, I believe.
Philip Short?
The Philip Short. I think they moved out of the area up by Kingsway. They moved up by Kingsway and Fraser. They had a big house up on the hill, and we used to go there for Yuntif, because the house was big enough. Just at that time, all the families used to get together.
Yeah.
Used to get together.
Yeah, I know. I've seen pictures of the big, long...
Yeah. Well, they had the very big house, dining room, living room. To me, it was like a big dance hall, because it was all connected into one.
That's probably the house for that picture, that family picture.
It could be. It could be.
Probably. You can see it's in their backyard.
They had a huge yard.
Yeah. Like I said, we'll get that picture, but you can definitely see it was in the backyard, and it was basically Swartz's, Diane's grandparents.
Yeah.
It was like they were the only, they were seated, in the place of honor.
I didn't know the Mann family. I just knew Max.
Max Mann.
But I didn't know the others. I didn't even know Goldstein. Max Goldstein. I didn't even know them.
Well, they weren't really. Yeah, they weren't in the. They were like, you know.
I knew of Max as I got older. Acme Electric. That I knew it was owned by Max Goldstein. Then when I worked for Murray Goldman, they were doing a renovation. Max was doing the wiring. And somehow we got in a conversation, and he was a great kibitzer. And I said, you know, you're lucky, but maybe one day I could be marrying your daughter. He said, oh, no, you're not. But sure enough, that's how life worked out.
Yeah, life does work out.
Yeah.
So what are your fondest memories of your parents?
Oh, growing up, well, we tried to do everything as a family. We used to walk from 14th. Was it 14th? Yeah. We used to walk from 14th and Main. No. Yeah. I got to remember. Because we used to walk from 14th and Main. Or was it Georgia Street? Jesus, I don't know. We used to walk from 14th. Yeah, I think it was 14th. We used to walk 14th and Main way up over the Marple Bridge, which is called Sea Island. It was Lulu Island, and have a picnic on Sundays on a sandbar just to kill time. Okay, that was me and myself and Escher at that time. He was just 4 years old, I was eight.
Yeah.
Just to kill the day. We used to walk. Growing up, you grew up with the family. It was just a life of experiences.
Well, did you? Now I know you. Ultimately, your parents lived on 22nd, 23rd.
Oh, that was after. That's when
the Sherrod Sedek moved.
That's when the Sherrod Sedek moved, and not only that, peddling became a little more profitable. And this time now, my mother says, it's time that we look for a house. And the shul's going on 19th and Oak. So perhaps we should be looking for a house close by. So my father and my mother went looking, and all of a sudden, there's a house on 22nd that's for sale. Now, I wasn't there at the time, but I don't know where I was, to be honest with you. But anyway, my mother saw the house. Nishkefela, she said. Got a toilet upstairs. Got two bedrooms upstairs. Got a bedroom on the main floor. A toilet. A bathroom on the main floor. It's got a basement. Nishlecht. So the gentleman who owned the boat was a retired sea captain. And it wasn't a huge house, but it was a house sufficient enough for all of us, because each one of us, Usher and myself, I had my bedroom, Usher had his bedroom, and he shared it with David, big enough.
Yeah.
So my parents put a bid in, and the gentleman said, okay, house is yours. No fights, no arguments. They agreed on the price, and that was it. So that's when they moved up to 22nd and Oak.
Which would be the late
40s. Prior to that, we were on 14th Avenue, 14th and Main.
Oh.
From Georgia Street to 14th and Main. We moved into that house. It was after 1941 is when the Japanese, when they confiscated all the Japanese property.
Yeah.
So these houses had belonged to the Japanese civilians, but they were rounded up and sent up in the interior. So they were up for sale. So my father didn't have enough money to buy the home. He didn't have sufficient down payment, was $500. So he went to a friend to borrow some money. And the friend said, what do you want me for? I want to buy a house for my family. Where's the house? 14th and Main. Come to Stanford. You show me. Go there, Mr. Hammer. Here's the $500. No papers, nothing. You pay me when you can pay me back. So my father gave the money, gave it to the guy, took the house. That's where we moved from Georgia Street to 14th and Main. Now, There's where it is. I just got back. From 14th and Main, we walked to Maripol, over the Maripol Bridge. Before Oak Street was Oak Street.
Yeah, yeah, I remember
okay.
that.
Okay, before Oak, it was nothing but bushes and trails. That's 14th and Main. So once we got to 14th and Main, now there's a nice big house, a nice French room, bedroom. Bedroom. Well, this room was a bedroom. Bedroom, kitchen. Upstairs was a suite. Half kitchen. Okay? So, but it didn't, we had gas. And to turn it in the kitchen, we needed to get the gas upstairs. So my father called a gas fitter. I can remember him calling a gas fitter, came in and said, "Can't do it." My father says, "What do you mean you can't do it? Can't run the gas downstairs, we've got to run the pipes." "That's it, you can't do it." "No, can't do it." "Okay." So I said, "What are you going to do?" "Show you? I will show you." Ran the pipe up through the closets, up to the top floor. Got it all the pipes in, hooked it. Had the stove, hooked it to the stove. "Now," he says, "Shoyle, I want you to turn the gas on. And if it's got bubbles, we know we got a leak. Now, you got soap and water, each joint was visible, not in the floor, but visible in the closet, in the corner." I turned the gas on slowly. "Yeah, I turn it on, Dad. I'm turning it on. Hurry up. It's got to have pressure. It's got to build up." I said, "You got to turn on the stove first." "Yeah, got it up. Gas got up there. Check this one." Nope. Beautiful. That was it. He connected it on gas stove.
You use the word Shoyle.
Shoyle, Saul. S-A-U-L. That's my middle name. Ham Shoyle.
Okay, so... Just remember that.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah. Well, he never called me Harry.
He called you Shoyle.
Shoyle. Well, Harry is for they called me Harry because they didn't want to call me Saul. It was too Yiddish.
Yeah.
So they called me Harry. But the fellows in the East End I grew up with till I was 13, 14 years old knew me as Saul, not Harry. When I went to Florence Nightingale, they knew me as Harry. Then I went to King Ed, it was still Harry, but those who grew up in the East End knew me as Saul. So when I used to come down and play softball with them, okay, and they used to call me Saul. Well, I knew it was me. So it didn't bother me.
Yeah. That's the first I've ever heard of your name in that way.
Yeah, Ham Shoyle. See, they used to say Ham Shoyle, Harry Saul. But calling me, it would be Shoyle.
Yeah.
See, my aunt, Shoyle. Benny used to call me Philip Schulke.
Philip, I thought it was Fievel.
Fievel, yeah. That's right. But my mother used to yell, "Schulke!" Some of the kids knew me as Schulke. Right?
Yeah.
So, Philip today calls me Schulke. I call him Fievel. Benny, our cousin Benny Kurtz, who had passed away, called me Schulke. I used to call him Baruch. Benny in English.
Yeah. I know the names, the childhood names that you grew up with.
Yeah.
Now, I know your parents were involved in community things.
Well, they were involved, in community life, but primarily involved with family. Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Shiur Tzedek.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. The Shiur Tzedek was 101%.
Yeah, I mean, that was really part of their life.
Yeah,
As I recall, you know, with your father, with the Hever Kedisha.
That's my mother tried to have a Kedisha for a while, but she didn't like it.
No, it's have to sit with the body and things.
Yeah.
But
they're definitely for the Shiur Tzedek.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So now we're going to start moving to you. Now
okay.
That we finished with the parents. So you grew up in the
40s.
Well, in the 30s, you were born in
1932, but...
Your first school was...
My first school was Strathcona, up to about grade four, I can't remember.
Okay. Yeah.
Grade four, Florence Nightingale was 6, 7, and 8. Okay, yeah.
Where's Florence Nightingale?
Florence Nightingale, 12th, almost Guelph and Kingsway, right behind the Biltmore.
Ah, yeah, okay.
That was Florence Nightingale.
Okay, and from there you went to King Ed, because you'd already moved to...
22nd, no, not yet. I was still on 14th Avenue, because I used to thumb along 12th to get to King Ed with Mike Power. Mike Power lived on 17th and on 18th and Ontario, and he used to walk down to Ontario and 12th. I used to walk up 12th from Main Street, Ontario, and him and I used to thumb to school. We had a fellow who used to pick us up in a hot car and drive us to Kiget.
In a hot car, meaning?
In a stolen car.
Oh, very nice. And how about your religious education? You're Hayter?
Hayter we went to was on 14th Avenue.
And?
14th, just before Yukon, off Oak Street. Dina Wask was the teacher there at the time. She was the violinist.
Yeah.
Maurice's wife.
Yeah.
And Mr. Youngson. Oh, wait. Yeah. 14th. And then we went to the Jewish Community Center on Oak Street, yeah. Downstairs. Mr. Youngson was my teacher.
Yeah, I remember hearing
about
him.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, that was actually the Talmator, the initial Talmator, Cater.
Yeah.
And, okay, so let's start with, and you lead on this, you know, try to remember from your earliest time what your memories of growing up on the East End was. And
growing up in the East End, going to school, okay, going to South Dakota was no problem there. You'd run into a lot of, it wasn't actually called anti-Semitism, but being Jewish, sort of maneuver through the Italian kids and the Yugoslavian kids and the Croatians, and, you know, of course, you're always outnumbered, so you just get the shit kicked out of you, and you come home. What happened? I got beat up. Okay. Waiting the Jewish school, you had to get home fast because you had to have your Hebrew books, because the bus used to pick us up then.
The school bus?
From the Talmator.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a school bus, and you had to be on the corner on Heatley, which was up the street. No, Hawks, which was just up the street from our house. The bus would come at a certain time. You're not there, he's gone. And some of the kids knew my time schedule. They used to come, and you used to have one or two kids here, somebody here, distract you, get your book and tear the pages. Jeez, I used to get to school, my books were torn. So we used to scotch tape, not that time, they used to paste them back in again. You know, I was getting tired of this. So I used to complain to my father. My father used to say, Jewish boy, Jews just got slapped his cheek, he turned us and just slapped his cheek. I said, but Dad, I only got two cheeks. I'm tired of this. I get beat up all the time, you know. They hit me here and hit me there. So he said, sure, what do you want me to do? I said, Dad, there's got to be a place where I can learn to fight. Oh, my son, I can see it now. He says, okay. There's a place on Main and Hastings behind the pool hall. And they're sort of learning how to box. It costs you 25 cents a week. 25 cents for two visits. Yeah, John Pudley's got 25 cents. Going to give him me to learn how to fight? So he took me there. And there was some real boxers. They fought here in Vancouver. These were professional boxers, but they had another ring for guys in the neighborhood who wants to fool around. So you learn. I learned how to do this. I learned a little of this. A little more confidence in myself. That's where I was lacking confidence, because just always told Jews don't fight. Okay. One day, I'm waiting for the bus, and a couple of guys come up to me, and I got to figure out who's the leader. It's not always the one who's mouthing off, but you got to make a choice. Either pick out one. So I picked one fellow out. He made a move to me, and I hit him. Well, I knocked him down. He didn't get up. Yeah, the other guys ran. I missed my bus. Oh, should I come home? I got hell. Oh, my mother gave me heck. I said, Mom, it's not my fault. You're going to be bar mitzvah, and you haven't got nothing. Oh, I said, Mom, it's not my fault. Next thing I know, knock on the door. This is later on. Yeah. I'm Mr. Boshevaka, whatever that name Bohunk is. Yeah. Your son punched my son, and you hurt him. You hurt my son. And my mother says, excuse me, I'll get my husband. So my father comes to the door. He says, my father knew him. Ah, so I worried. Oh, well, yeah. Your son hit my son. I'm glad he hit your son. How many times has your son hit my son? Ask him. Well, that's not right. Well, tell your son not hit my son, and my son won't hit your son. Okay? No, Mr. Hammer, you know, you Jews. My father says, don't talk like that. Don't talk like that, my friend. Or I'll hit you. Oh, well, my father raised his voice, and he gave hands on him like this.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, the gentleman said, oh, Mr. Hammer, I don't want nothing to do with you. My father said, that's fine, I guess. I'm standing there, you know, behind my father. I'm listening to all this. My father stood up to him. The guy was this big. My father's this big. And the gentleman walked out. That was it. Next day, I had no problem going to school. And that's when it started. I learned how to fight back.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying I won everything. No, I came home with bleeding noses and everything else, but the other guy came home with something else. I never won all of them, but I show I can defend myself if I have to. And sure enough, years progressed. Those who did what to me, I was able to catch them in Kenya after. So, I got my revenge as I got older.
Yeah.
So but that's growing up in East End. You had to fight your way through.
Yeah.
And not only me, there's a couple Negro boys who live down the block from me. They had to fight their way through. Okay. It's not a fight. It's always a one group.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but you get a group of four, all of a sudden, they're stark.
Yeah.
But get them by themselves.
And they're meek.
Yeah. Always one group wants to rule the neighborhood. The Italians didn't want the Jews here, and the Ukrainians didn't want the Schwarzes here, and the Poles didn't want the Croatians here. That you had a big melting pot. Right. Everybody lived together. Everybody had to learn. I mean, you learned to live with each other, but you had to show that you could defend yourself. And it took a long time. It took a long time to do it, but you were persistent and you became friends. Now, I go to the East now. I'm at all these East End reunions. The only Jew.
Really? You know,
oh, somebody. Well, Philip. Yeah, Philip too, but Philip, not as much as I am. And today, whenever there's a thing, I get the invitation to come in to the Italian Community Center when they have East End reunions. Hammer, you're the token Italian. No, I'm the token Jew, not Italian. Gee, Hammer, why do you always do this? I just show up. This is me.
Yeah. Because, you know, I've seen pictures of, you know, stress going to the kids, and there was also a lot of Asian kids, Japanese.
Oh, yeah, a lot of Japanese, but I remember going to Strathcona one day with my friend Benji. The classes were half empty. They were all rounded up.
That would be 42.
Yeah. And the classes, my gosh, the school, half of Strathcona was already Japanese.
Yeah.
Okay, and after that, it was half empty, but the immigrants all came, you know, people came from different parts of the world, settled in the East End, and it's like today, it's all now becoming Portuguese. Okay, well, the whole commercial drive is Portuguese, the Italians are gone. They moved out now. They have had enough of that immigrant life.
Yeah.
Now they became affluent. Okay, they move out of that neighborhood. Okay, that's what happens everywhere.
I know.
Okay.
I know. So, you know, yeah. So okay, now you got. How about Usher? Did you have to defend him? 4 years younger than you.
Well, I stood up for him indirectly. Nobody would touch him because of me.
So that was
my reputation
preceded
me. Yeah.
So Usher being 4 years younger than you, I guess he
had
a few years of stress.
He never had any of this. No. If he did, it was the odd guy who jacked around. You know how you get a disagreement.
Yeah.
I don't think it was ever called Dirty Jew, Rotten Jew, or anything like that.
And David
goes on his merry old way.
Yeah. No, but David grew up really in the Oaks.
Yeah,
area.
David, he grew up in 14th.
Yeah, but if he was born in 1940, so you moved him.
He was only 1 year old down in the East End, but his life primarily was on the 14th. And then when we moved to 19, when the Sherrod Sedek, up at 22nd.
Yeah. So, okay, so that's why you have some specific memories, you know.
Yeah, then they're all good memories.
Yeah.
Well, to me, it was, you see, I don't regret all that. It made me who I am.
Of course it did.
Okay, it gave me perspective in life, what I had to endure, what I appreciated, okay? I don't hold grudges against these guys. I understood it. At that time, I didn't understand it. But I was a 97-pound weakling, if anything. I was afraid to even raise a hand. I just didn't understand. Because it's always been drilled in me, Jews don't fight. Jews have no rights. Everything. But if you stood up once, you could stand up twice. Then you stand up three times. Four times. Finally, they, wait a minute. Oh, look at this. He's standing up for his rights. Now people start respecting you. Now the word goes out. But don't start anything with hammer, because he'll kick your shit out of you, or he'll fight you till it's over. Because I threatened one fellow, believe it or not, that I told him when I had a big fight in Robson Park, that's on Kingsway.
Yeah.
Had a big fight with a guy in Robson Park. I said, there were 6 million Jews killed. I can kill you right now. Right this minute, I can kill you. I'd be very happy too. That would free me of the guilt of 6 million Jews killed because they didn't defend themselves. And his brother came to me and said, Harry, please, I understand, your older brother, please, don't do that. My brother will never bother you again, I promise you. I said, Sid, I'm taking you at your word. Next time your brother confronts me, that's what I'll do. You tell him, I'll kill him. Because I've got my blood running with 6 million Jews that are dead. And I'll tell you, your adrenaline pumps.
You mentioned the 6 million dead. When did you first
from the newspapers.
Yeah, during the war,
You know, read the con- you know what? My father and I used to follow the war. And we him and I had paper following the war, the battles, and all the news. As my uncle told me that many Jews died. He didn't know of 6 million dead. Mm-hmm. It was only when it was publicized 6 million Jews were dead. Okay, that's when everything started changing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said, the...
I was 18, 19 then.
18, 19. Yeah, so, right.
Yeah.
Because I recall, just to balance it, it's not about me, but I recall that initially all we knew was the war was bad for
Jews,
Germans were bad to Jews. But even the word Holocaust...
No, the word Holocaust did not come into effect.
No.
A lot of information came out of Europe. A lot of information came out of Europe. That the Jews were in the gas chambers and no one would believe it. Okay, digging trenches and throwing in the people. Nobody believed it.
Of course not.
Okay. So, but when they publicized the number, okay, that stuck with me.
The 6 million.
Yeah.
The during the war. What was your life like then?
During the war, when we lived on Georgia Street, it had to be Columbus Day. Columbus Day is for the Italians. And they come down, Italian uniform, Italian flag flying. I marching down the street.
That stopped.
No, they come by. We're being Jewish. In the house. Get in the house, quick. You don't know what would happen, right? You were afraid. These guys are marching down Georgia Street they weren't German uniforms. They were Italian uniforms. And you knew Italy was in the war, right?
On the other side.
Okay. And you got searchlights from the RCAF on Georgia Street for night... during the war, so any airplanes were going to come over and bomb you. Of course, they never did. And you had air raid wardens. You had to darken your windows at night, so no light could shine through the window. Okay, you had all this like a wartime thing. You did during that time, you know. And these guys, Columbus Day, come marching, marching music. They Benito Mussolini, they're walking like this. And boy, I remember, and my father says, get in the house, quick. And I look out the front of the window to see them marching down the street, big, big shots. But you're 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
To you, it's wow. You know? So these are all experiences that I have experienced, and others who live there. But not too many Jewish kids lived down that where I was.
On Georgia.
Yeah, I was pretty far down. There's one or two maybe guys further down, but I didn't know who they were. I know there was another Jewish family, but when you cross, there's Campbell Avenue. When you're on the other side of the tracks, you don't go walking over the other side of the track because you don't know what's down there. Okay, so as I say, you had your neighborhood. My area was in Georgia Street, but I was living in Cadova Street. Okay, see, I lived on Cadova. My area was Victory Square. That was my park.
It's a nicer area.
Yeah. Well, it's an area that you grew up in, and that's all the Jewish secondhand stores were there. All the secondhand stores were there. And I used to climb up the fire escape, get on the roof, bouncing from roof to roof, and the Jewish merchants shaking. I get your father! I get your father!
Yeah.
And my father yelling at me, "Get down! Get down!"
So, where were you bar mitzvahed?
Oh, the Shared Tzedek. On Heatley.
Yeah.
You
remember that?
Yeah, very good. Nice bar mitzvah.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very, yeah. Matter of fact, Reverend Spiro, at that time, of course, Patinsky was a rabbi, but Reverend Spiro taught us our
Haftorah.
And Mike Power and I are born the same time. I'm born the end of August. He's born on the 18th of August. I can remember Reverend Spiro says, "Oh, both you fellas have got the same muster." No, I said, "That's nice." And because Mike was getting his bar mitzvah at the Beth and Midrash up on Heather Street. And I was being bar mitzvah down the Sherrod Tzedek. And Reverend Spiro says, "Are you boys planning to go each other's bar mitzvah?" "Oh, yeah. And what are you going to do when you go to Mike's bar mitzvah?" "Well, I'm going to have a lemon sit in front of me, eat a lemon." "Oh, all right, nice." Mike says, "Oh, no, you're not." So the Reverend said this, "Gentlemen, the bar mitzvah is going to be on the same day. You are the same, you're the Sherrod Tzedek, and you're the Beth Israel, so you don't interfere with each other." So Mike and I were quite good friends. Chummy.
Yeah.
Because he lived on Kiefer. I lived on Georgia, like across from each other. The back, our houses in the back faced each other.
Yeah, across the lane.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, and how about, let's go to King Ed. What was that like going to high school?
King Ed was good. It was a great high school.
Yeah, a lot of Jewish kids went there.
Oh, a lot of Jewish kids went there, yeah. A lot of Jewish kids, yeah. I met new Jewish friends who lived up Mackenzie, and I don't know, at that time, I didn't know anything about Shaughnessy, but they lived around 41st and Mackenzie, and they used to come to King Ed in red, burgundy cashmere sweaters and white corduroy pants, and I'm a dirty old, you know, how, wow,
so
big
was,
difference.
So East meets West.
Big difference. But the thing I remember is, I decided, well, you know what? Everybody said, "Hammer, don't go to King Ed in white corduroy pants." And I said, "Why?" "Well, the older boys will grab you and drag you across, drag all the newcomers across the grass." "Oh," I said, "oh, that's interesting. Okay." What did I do? I went someplace and bought a light pair of corduroys. I think it's $12, or I don't know.
Probably not that much then.
No, it wasn't. I don't know where I bought them, to be honest. Whatever, white corduroys, all ready to go to school. I had my old army boots on that I used for public school because couldn't afford soccer boots. I used army boots. And I had steel blinkies in the front for the ball. Anyway, white corduroy pants, or light color, army boots from the three vets.
Could be.
I think from the three vets, size 12. Yeah, from the three vets. That's right. My father. Yeah, my father went. And my father put on the blinkies because he knew how to fix shoes. And, So anyway, I'm there, and I come along, not 12th Avenue. I decided to come 10th behind the school, and Kitty Corner is a trail walking up to the grounds, the big field before the high school. And I'm walking up, and I can see guys pointing. Oh, okay. I'm asking for trouble because I already be pre-warned all the new guys would get the pants dragged. And I'm walking, and now I'm coming up the other little hill just before the school. It's all cement walk, walking up, and I see somebody that I recognize. "Hammer!" I said, "Yeah. What are you doing here?" I said, I'm starting at King Ed. "Oh, come on!" I said, "But I thought somebody's going to drag me across." "Oh, not you." I don't know if that was a story that that was told, but a couple of younger fellows had it done to them. Okay, the initiation coming into Kinghead, dragging your pants across the grass. So these are. But other than that, no, I've had all good experiences at Kinghead. You met fellows that you knew from other neighborhoods, and you sort of got even with some of them. Okay, in the locker room. That now you're grown up, and you know how to handle yourself.
Did you play any sports?
Football, soccer, English rugby. Yeah, I like contact sports, primarily English rugby and football.
Did you go to spend much time at the JCC? It was right across the street.
Well, yes. No, I belong to
AZA.
Oh yeah, AZA 646. Yeah, and we had nice teen town dances, and Sundays were poker games downstairs. The guys used to get together. The poker players used to play poker Sundays. Okay. Yeah, it was. It's where everybody met. After shul Friday night, or after Shabbos Friday night. Of course, Shabbos is all day, but Friday night, some of us would meet there, go different ways. Saturday night was a big night because you had dances and kids wanted to go to Chinatown, and a lot of the kids were afraid to go to Chinatown, afraid of getting beat up. Okay, so who would they ask? I would go down to Chinatown and meet my friends and say, listen, next Saturday night there's going to be a group of kids here from the Jewish Community Center. I want no trouble. Hammer, there's never any. Well, they call me Hammer.
Yeah.
They can call me Harry or Shoki. Or,
it's like your father.
Hammer. Yeah. I said, listen, I'm going to bring a group of kids down here. I don't want any trouble. No fighting, no push, no fighting, and no aggravation, please. Because they want to enjoy themselves. So, next week I come up. You guys tell me where you're going to go. I'll tell somebody. Some of them got smart. They were, you know, you get smart, you get unsmart pretty quick. And especially down that end of town, at that time, was a very tough crowd. Because you had American sailors. A lot of guys from different gangs hung out in Chinatown. Chinatown was altogether different than what it is now. You had nightclubs downtown. You had very top restaurants downtown. And quite a few of the kids would go down 11:30, 12 o'clock. Okay, kept their noses clean. They had a great time. But I would know beforehand who's going down.
So you graduated from Kinghead when?
From Kinghead?
Yeah.
Well, I went to grade 11 in Kinghead. What year was that? Oh, see, 1953, we won the junior championship.
53, you would have been 21.
Yeah. 1953. We won the junior BC championship. I played for CYO, Catholic Youth Organization.
That's good.
I was right and left tackle. Well, I played softball for B'nai B'rith for many years. Then I played a couple of years for Sacred Hearts. That's the team down the East End, the official softball team. And then my last year, I got a call from a fellow called Bill Smith, who played for Vancouver Blue Bombers. Because that was his last year to play. He'd be 21. And he had a falling out with Ranji Matu and Lauren Cullen from Vancouver, from the Vancouver Blue Bombers. And what they try to do is get a team for CYO from the cast-offs from UBC Thunderbirds And it's what they call the unfit, or whatever you call these guys. The flunkies from UBC Thunderbirds, because the marks were bad.
Yeah.
Myself, because I liked contact, and I knew Bill Smith. And we would practice at Vancouver College. So as we're practicing everything, we got talking, gee, we need another end. And nobody knew anybody. Well, I knew of somebody that he was going to, a Jewish fellow, who's going to play for Mary Lomas. And I phoned him. I said, his name is Bunny Lotzker. I said, Bunny, listen, don't go play for Mary Lomas. Come play for CYO. Why? Well, they'll give you a leather, nice leather jacket, a sweater, everything. Jeez, Bunny, don't play for it. Come here for CYO, for crying out loud. You get a nice, you get nothing from Mary Lomas. Sure enough, he came. And we all practiced. And we, at that time, we won the BC Championship in football. Got to Edmonton, got skunked 45-5. But it was a close game.
At the opening bell.
Oh, but these guys in Edmonton, I've never seen guys that big.
Did you have any jobs during your school years?
Well, primarily I worked for Marshall Wells when I left school.
While you were at school, did you do it?
Well, it started out as summer holidays, but I liked that job and I liked the pay. So I decided, what the heck? Might as well work, make some money. And that's what I did. Yeah. So
Marshall Wells is...
Marshall is a big hardware on the foot of Carroll Street. Now, if you're going towards... away from Pender Street, going south. Down Carroll. It's a big warehouse. They had hardware, home goods, stoves, fridges, pipes, everything. It was a big hardware, Marshall Wells. It was a big hardware company. The pay was good.
So how long did you work there?
Oh, for a couple of years. And then I figured, well, that's enough. That's enough of this kind of work.
And what about your romantic life?
I've had a little.
Yes, I know, but for the record, you know,
I've had a good, I've had a good life.
I know you have. You know, in the early 50s.
Yeah, early 50s, or the 52. I was okay. It's after when we finished playing football. As I said, I'll be 21 in that year, so I was okay. And Bunny and I decided we go have a holiday. So what we wanted to do is just go someplace for a holiday. So Bunny said, "You know what? I got an idea." I said, "What's the idea?" "Let's go buy a car." "Oh, that's okay." So where did we go? We went down Powell Street. We went to the scrapyards. And there, Davis Junk Company had a car, a 1929 Essex. So we went there, and I don't remember the gentleman. It could have been Davies. I really don't remember. And there was a car sitting there. It had spoke wheels. And he said, how much? I think it was $25 or $50. I'm not too sure. Had trouble starting the car. So Biden, we lift up and look at the engine. What the heck's going on? A couple wires here, I don't know. Taped them up or something. And put it back. And
what was it?
A cranker. Yeah. Sparker. Jeez, all of a sudden, boom, the car's jumping over. Oh, wow, this is where I'm going. You boys got it going. Okay. So what we did is we took, it was a took off the top, and we bolted a trunk on the body. And we put our clothes in there. We were on a two-week holiday. We took the car. We took the car and went into the States, down through Washington, Idaho, or we touched Montana, Wyoming, and came back up Bonner's Ferry, up through Radium, went to Banff. That's where I met my, well, that's where I met my first wife, at Banff. She was on a holiday from Edmonton. Okay, and it was late at night, too. It was late at night. She was with one or two girls, and Bunny and I were by herself. And we start talking. I asked her, are you Jewish? She said, yeah. But I'm a teacher up in Edmonton. Oh, no, I work for the recreation department in Edmonton. What do you do? I said, I do nothing. I wasn't working. I said, she was very intrigued, something about her really intrigued me. So I said, I'm only here for a short visit. You like Chinese food? She says, I love it. Okay, let's go to the Green Lantern. The Green Lantern in Banff is just a small little Chinese restaurant. And her and I go in there, and Bunny is already talking with this other girl. And I said, you know what? I'm only here for one or two days, but I'd like to talk to you later or write to you later. Can you give me your name and your it's easy. She's being Jewish, I'm Jewish, I can't get in any trouble.
Yeah.
If I did, it didn't matter anyway. Because
yeah.
Both being Jewish.
Yeah.
Right? That's where I looked at it. So we finished our trip. She went and I got back home. Oh, I start writing her a letter and everything else. And, oh, she said, well, I'm coming to Vancouver. Oh, that's nice. So she came to Vancouver. And she applied for a job at the Parks Board. She got it as a recreation director. And she found a place to live on 22nd in Yukon, down the street from...
Yeah. You.
Upstairs. We started dating. And
what was your name?
And Naomi. Yeah. But there was no horsing around.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, things are different.
No. There was no horsing around. That's the whole problem. But anyway, we out for a couple of days. I found out she was only here for a couple of months. Then she had to go back to Edmonton. So she went back to Edmonton. And, I said, I like her. I'm going to marry her. So I told my folks. So, what? You don't even know the girl. I says, don't have to know a girl. She's Jewish, that's all. And sure enough, I moved to Edmonton. We went there and I gave a phone call. Oh, how are you? I'm fine. Where are you calling me from? Edmonton. What? Train station. You're here? I says, yeah, and where? And then we found a place, Mr. Feldman. I stayed at Mr. Feldman's place. It was a room under the stairs. Just a bed. What do I need more? So it was just a bed. Okay. And then she came and met me. She drove her father's car, nice big ship. And she drove me to her parents' house. They lived on 3102 Stony Plain Road. Right now it's the West Edmonton Mall. Sitting there. Okay. So she brings me into the house, introduces me to her parents. I Mr. Mullen, call me Abe. This is my mother, Mrs. Mullen, Sonia. You call me Mrs. Mullen. Fine, thank you. And what do you do? I said, I do nothing. Oh, man, we got talking and everything else. What are your intentions, young man? I said, well, hopefully I can marry your daughter. Well, Abe and Sonia were fairly well off. He had it'd be like a dollar variety store now in North Edmonton on 118th Avenue. It was from Clark Stadium. The football stadium is way down there someplace. But he had a big shop. Like if you went to the dollar store on 49th, you know Nat's department store?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a dollar store.
Yeah.
That's the kind of store he had. A general variety store. Very successful man. Big, tough, huge guy. Okay. So where did I work? First I started, first I said, what am I going to do? How can I make some money fast? So I went over the next day, Friday, whatever it was. I went to the Army Navy on 101st Street. And who did I see is Ace Kalinske. Ace Kalinske played for B'nai B'rith. He was a good pitcher. And I played with him.
Softball.
Aaron, oh gosh, how are you? I said, Aaron, you got to help me. He says, what is it you need? I need a job. What can you do? I could sell. You're hired. Okay, you want to go work now in the shoe department? We'll pay you $50 a week. Okay, what do I know about shoes? I went right away taking that in that department, you know, what size you wear, you know, this, that. So I was selling shoes and boots. Oh, yeah, I was doing pretty good. And you had to keep a tally on what you sold, because they paid you $50 a week.
You know,
at the end of the week, looks at it. Can you sell clothing too? I said, sure. Okay, from now on, I want you. You sell the shoes, you go right over to the clothing. Take the shoes with you, and if anybody bothers you, tell them to come talk to him. So, okay, now I'm into the clothing. And a couple of the clothing guys are complaining to somebody, and then this fella comes, Mr. Brooke, starts with a B. Anyway, nice, another Jewish fella comes over to me, and he says, what you doing here? I says, I'm selling clothing. Who told you to come here to sell clothing? Aaron Kalinske. Aaron sent you here? I said, yeah, ask Ace. You call him Ace? Oh, you know him very well? No, I don't know him at all. I don't want to play around. Okay, I come right back. I'm selling, coming. Aaron says, I'm to leave you here. Move him over there. Move the other guy out. Put me in. Hey, I was selling like it was going out of style. Okay. Now, that lasted for about a year. Now, I said, you know, I think it's time we can get married. And I'm still living under Feldman's.
Yeah.
I think it's time we can get married. She says, well, what would you do? I said, well, my folks won't be able to travel here. Let's go back to Vancouver. Let's get married in Vancouver. And then we'll come back here. So my folks and my family can attend the wedding. No problem. So we go walk up to her mother and her father. I said, Abe, I'd like to marry your daughter. You got my permission. I said, Mrs. Mullen, I'd like to marry your daughter. You can call me Sonia. We got our permission. But, oh, what's the but? It's got to be in Vancouver. No problem. So her and I packed up, went to Vancouver, planned everything out. We got married. Not an issue. We got married in a... Oh, wait a minute. No, got married in a house. Yeah, we got married in our house. What wasn't the shul?
On 22nd Avenue?
Yeah, on 22nd. No, it wasn't in the shul. It was in our house. And then we went to the Hotel Vancouver for the reception. And at that time, we went to the hotel for the reception. And then where did we stay? We stayed at the Grand Union Hotel, right across the street from the CPR, where it was owned by the Tyre family, or Morris, or Tyre, or Morris family. They had a furniture shop on Hastings Street, but they owned the hotel, whether it's Tyler or Tyre. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so we stayed at the Grand Union. Next day we caught the train, back to Edmonton. And I'm still without a job.
That's when you had the job at Army Navy.
No, that was gone. So now what did I do? Okay, I come back. And I thought, geez, now do I want to go back to the Army Navy? I'm married now. I got a family. Maybe I'll go talk to Lord Shoes. Lord Shoes was the king in the King Edward Hotel, 101st and 102nd, 101st. He was right under the King Edward Hotel. High class shoes. I figured I'll try it. I went in there, introduced myself. Well, we have people. Okay, we'll try you out. First, they wanted to know where I said I worked at the Army Navy, but I know I can sell your shoes. So I was selling the shoes. The shoes were, $18.95, $25.95. Expensive shoes, expensive handbags. So being the last one on call, you got the leftover. But gradually, I built up a little clientele in a short period of time. So far, I haven't found a place to live, and I'm staying with my in-laws. And gradually, it started working more and more. Finally, I sold this woman 5 pairs of shoes and shoe polish. And handbags. Oh, what a score that was. Oh, happy as a lark. It was a Saturday afternoon. And then around 3:30, 4 o'clock, a guy comes into the store asking, salesman number 21. Everybody points. I'm looking this way. Me. And I'm standing way in the back. Lord Shoes. They're here in Vancouver now, on Granville. They're the grandchildren of the owners. Are you number 20? Yeah. There's a woman here that you sold 5 pairs of shoes. She asked you who's going to shine her shoes. I said, ask your husband. Yeah? Well, I'm her husband. Oh, fuck, I'm in trouble. He says, well, anybody that can sell my wife shoes, handbags, and polish, it has to come to work for me. I said, who are you? I'm Henry Singer. Henry Singer Menswear. Yeah. Down the street. I said, but I'm working here. I don't care if you're working here or not, and I'll double what they pay you here. Well, I was only getting $45 a week plus 1% commission. Right? That's all I was getting. I said, oh, okay. Never asked me how much I made. I said, I'll double whatever you make in here. Okay. Pulls me out of the store. Now here comes a guy with an open shirt, with a tie around as a belt. This is Henry's group from the Edmonton, like he sort of, what Murray Goldman was to, well, Henry Singer was what he is to Edmonton Eskimos in Edmonton. Yeah. Publicity.
Yeah.
Okay. Schlepped me in the store. And his manager is Herb Boogs Meredith. he was the manager of the very suave, sophisticated jungle. Nothing's out of place. And he said, Harry, Henry told me that I'm to train you. You're going to immolate me. I said, okay. First thing is, you got to get your shoe shined. Creasing, nice press pant, a shirt, tie, and you got to look the part. Oh, I said, okay. Mr. Meredith. No, call me Boogs. Okay, Boogs. So I would emulate him, copy him, how he handled the merchandise in the store. I used to look in the mirror, practice in front of a mirror, to stand, presentation, how to read people, all these different things, okay? So, meanwhile, I still haven't got a place to stay. So, and I'm starting to work, and I'm making money, and I see my first paycheck. I'm sure he hasn't seen what, he hasn't asked me how much I made here, but he's overpaying me, whatever he's paying me. Okay, because I went upstairs to this girl. I said, Rose, there must be a mistake on my check. She says, there's no mistake. There's no mistake on your check, Mr. Hammer. This is what you're earning. And not only that, if you go over, she told me, if you go over a certain quota, you'll get 1.5% more. And I was getting $95 a week plus 3%. Like coming home with $200, you know what I'm saying? Commission.
Yeah.
I said, okay. Now, I practiced the art in front of a mirror. And at that time, I was married to where I lived with my in-laws. And they had a stand-up mirror, and I practiced my stance, posture, presentation, this. And after a month, I couldn't believe my sales were phenomenal. I had clients from the farms and the Hutterites and everything was natural. It was just natural at the right time. Finally, we look at the paper and we see an apartment for rent across from the shul on Jasper Avenue called the Buckingham Apartments. And they wanted $95 a week. I'm sorry, $95 a month. So I said $95 a month, that's 1 week's earning to me.
Yeah.
I can afford it. So went there, we looked at it, okay. And that's when we found out that she was pregnant, my wife. Okay. So very successful working at Henry's. And I got to meet a lot of the Jewish fellows from Edmonton, a couple rounders, thugs, whatever they were, and a couple of good friends. One of her best friends was Maxie Grabel. Maxie Grabel was a fight promoter. But Naomi had a job with the Parks Board. She was a director. She had a great job. And her best friend was Maxie. Maxie had a heart of gold. Okay, but he was a bleeder. He cut himself.
I forget what it's called, necrophilia.
Hemophobia. Okay. But unbelievable, a character. Okay, he used to listen to what he was telling me. Then he introduced me. He introduced me to his brother, Benny Grabel. You might have heard of him. He played 1 year for the Edmonton Eskimos, blew out both knees. He was finished. Benny lives here in Vancouver. Another great guy. He traveled for Joe Siegel in Taiwan for shoes.
Yeah.
Okay. These are just names. Okay.
That's good to give names. It relates to other
people. Oh, yeah. And then we were... Her and I, we're having a... Okay, our baby was born in August in 1950. 55. She's 60 now. My first daughter.
So then it would be 63, 53, 54. If she's 60 now.
No, she's 60. Yeah, okay. What I see, I'm trying to figure the dates out. Yeah, she's 60 now. This coming August. And then we got David Friedman from Walk Right. Took a shine to her. He took a shine to her after I married her and started to play around a little bit. And that time the Jewish people would go to a place called the Seven Seas. It's a big, massive restaurant, okay, Chinese food. And one day her parents took her for dinner. Took her out. Yeah, that's fine. And then, for some reason, David Friedman came in. And I thought, what the hell's going on? So, and somebody phoned me and told me, David Friedman's in the restaurant and Naomi's there. What the hell's going on here? Okay. So I said, well, I can't leave because I've got a baby to look after. Hammer, we want us to look after it? No. I need somebody to look after the baby. I'll get my sister. So I wait till the sister came. I said, there's where the bottle is. I don't know if I had an Austin or a Studebaker at that time, an old clunker. Drove it down, parked down the street, walked into the restaurant, and there's David Friedman sitting with Niobe. I walked up to him, pulled him out of the goddamn chair, right across the table. Leave my wife alone. And I went back home. Now when we come, the parents drove her home. Naomi said, why did you do that for her? I said, you're my wife. Where was he when you were single? Never looked at you. Now that you're married, you start to look good to him. Well, let him go find his own woman. Not mine. Oh, you're a hothead. I says, no, I'm not a hothead. Let him go find his own woman. You didn't appeal to him when you were single. You appeal to him now. Now he's got the hots for you. Okay, but that's not what I said then.
Yeah.
Okay? So, and I'm going to work. No problem. And one day, Henry comes to me and he says, I hear you had a problem last week. I got no problem. No. At the Seven Seas. Oh, that was no problem. It was a misunderstanding. But now he understands. And he says, well, you're still working here. But these are things that went on. But I had friends in Edmonton that I don't know where they came from, to be honest with you, that if I had a problem, they would solve it quickly. But I never even asked for this. I didn't even want that. It's just that I got along with a lot of people. And I knew them. See? And I knew them. You have one of the most successful businessmen here in Vancouver. I knew elsewhere who had heavies protecting them. Okay? And I know these guys.
This David Freeman, this is the David Freeman.
Walk Right.
Pardon?
It's from Walk Right.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
No. No, he was an asshole.
There's a number of David Friedmans.
Yeah. No. He was an asshole. No matter who you talk to, he was an asshole. Yeah. So, but that's, I only stayed there about 3 years. Some, after a while, it just sort of fell apart. It was me. It was me. It's not that I was too hot-headed. you know how sometimes you have a chip on your shoulder, okay? So it was me. Naomi and I got into a big argument, and it was over nothing. It was over nothing. But I had a call from her uncle, and her uncle told me, Harry, the best thing for you to do is get out of it now, because it's going to be too late later. Strange. And he says, that's what I'm telling you. That's all he told me. It wasn't until quite a few years later I hear that same person blew his brains out.
This guy who called you?
Family. Yeah. The same person went through the same situation in family.
Yeah.
Blew his brains out.
So now you've separated.
Gone. Oh, yeah. I'm in Vancouver now. I'm in Vancouver.
What happened to the baby?
Pardon?
What happened to the...
Oh, no. Heather stayed with Naomi. Oh, no. Heather stayed with Naomi. She was 3 years old when I left.
She's 60 now.
Yeah. No, she's there. Yeah. Is this being recorded?
Of course this is being recorded. I just want to make sure that we... Because I don't like to go more than two hours.
Okay.
We can do another one. Yeah, don't worry.
Okay. Tell me when you want to finish it.
Go another half hour.
Okay.
Or so. We'll see.
All right. Just long as...
I want to get your whole story, so I don't want you to rush yourself.
No.
So that
was the end of that episode. And I started to work for Clinton Clothes. I walked in on the... I caught the bus home. All I had was my toothbrush. I left all my fishing equipment there because her father and I used to go fishing at Lake Wobbegon. We had a great time. I mean, it was me. I don't blame anybody. I know my fault, and I'm willing to admit it and accept it. So that's easy for me. And as I say, I came back to Vancouver on a Saturday. I walked into Clinton Clothes. I met Jack Elson. And I said, Jack, I need a job. He says, where do you work? I said, I worked for Henry Singer. I worked there for 3 years. Then, what are you doing here? I just left my wife. Oh. A couple of minutes later, there's a phone call. Saul Wine answered. No, he doesn't work here. Oh, wait a minute. Anybody here by the name of Harry Hammer? I said, that's me. Who the hell wants me? Who knows I'm here? And at that time it was Mr. Elson. You better go answer the phone. I said, okay. Hello? Henry? What do you phone me for? Come to work? No, I left. Sorry, Henry. It's got nothing to do with the work. It's not what I want. It's not you, it's the family, Henry. I have to leave the family. I'm sorry. It's best for me and for everybody else, Henry. I appreciate the work, the job, everything, believe me. But if you're ever in Vancouver, when you come through from Hawaii, please come and see me. Where are you going to be? I don't know, Henry. You'll have to phone a clothing store. I don't know. Okay. Wish me good luck, everything. That was it. So I worked for a while for Saul Wine. I couldn't get along with Jack Elson. It wasn't him, it was me. I was stubborn. I didn't want to listen to him. So then, where did I go? Then from him, I went to Dynamic Sales of BC. The guys were on Cadover Street. Shysters. But anyway, we were selling merchandise up north. As far as Prince George, over to Prince Rupert, over to Fernie, anywhere you can sell merchandise. I had a great time for a car.
You were traveling?
Travel, in a car. I had a nice four-door Buick.
The highways weren't too great, though.
Oh, no, but four-door hardtop Buick. Great. Sold merchandise, made money, had a good time. And after 2 years, my toes got sore. That's enough. that's enough driving. So packed it in. No. Well, I'll go to Fred Asher's. Let's see, I'll go work for Fred Asher. That's on Hastings Street. So I walked in. Ash, how are you? Oh, Harry Hammer, I've heard about you. Oh, okay. I'd like to have a job. Oh, well, I'm sure you have clothing experience. Yes, I worked for Henry Singer. Okay. Well, you can start with me. I said, okay. So I'm selling clothing. Then comes the 19, I'm selling clothing for a few years. And then he says, you know, you're making more money than my son-in-law. I said, well, your son-in-law was Marty Mandel.
Yeah.
Ash left his wife to marry, okay, Mrs. Mandel.
Yeah.
So some of the salespeople were complaining I'm making too much money. So I said, well, Ash, I'm working for a living. I'm selling merchandise, so I don't know what the beef is. He says, well, I can't really afford you. I said, okay. That's fine. Okay. Now, this is now getting to be 1962. Walk out of the store, went across the street to Murray Goldman. I asked to speak to Murray Goldman. They called him. Hey, how are you? Fine. Murray, I need a job. He says, but I thought you were Fred Asher. You can't afford me. Come on, tell me. How much did you make there? Okay, I told him. Well, Murray says, well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you a few dollars more, but I'll give you a higher percentage. The more you sell, the more money you're going to make. Fair. I said, that's good. So as I'm working for Murray Goldman, who did I get involved with? A girl from Calgary who lives in Vancouver, Gail Siegel. That was Gail Siegel from Calgary. Very vivacious. Wow, boy. Hot stuff. Okay, so I'm working in Murray's, doing a hell of a living. Then we decided we're going to get married. Okay, get married in the first year. Abby was born. So first we lived in an apartment on 1265 West 10th. And then sort of we didn't outgrow it, but I had friends from the motorcycle division who used to come in the back for their coffee breaks and everything else. Then we figured, well, listen, I think we'll have to get a different place to live. So we moved up to 17th and Oak, Richelieu Apartments.
Yeah.
Okay, now we have a nice suite. But this main floor was actually all one unit, but the owner split. He split it. So it made two units. So we lived on the unit facing Oak Street. And we had a great time there. We had a lot of parties because the nurses lived in the other section. They used to bring alcohol from the hospital.
Which year was this now?
Abby was born in 1963. That's down, so it had to be 64.
Yeah, so that was still owned by the Klein O'Matson.
That's right, yeah. That's right. And they the ones that owned up on 25th,
yeah.
On Oak Street.
The Los Angeles apartment.
That's right. We had parties in there, unbelievable. The friends that we accumulated. Unbelievable parties. It's just, we had a great time. Okay. Then we decided, okay, we have to buy a house. We had to sort of get into a place. So we bought a house on in between 32nd and 33rd and Oak Street, that house. So that house cost us $15,000. And, That's where we were raised, and Abby was 8 years old. Gail and I, we had a split, and I come home one day, and Gail is there with her previous boyfriend from Calgary sitting on the Chesterfield. So I had to be very dignified. I said, what's this asshole doing here? I'd like you to meet Gail. That's her future mate. I said, I don't want to talk to this asshole. Okay. I wasn't upset. I wasn't mad. I said, that's what you want, that's what you want. That's all there is to it. Best thing is, let's sell the house. So, we sold the house.
Well, I'm going to...
Go ahead.
You know what I'm going to end? Because there's a whole new
chapter.
Yeah, you got to keep going.
Okay,
so
that's fine.
We've reached now the mid-60s.
Yeah.
And you've just... you've split with Gail.
Yeah, we just split now.
And she moved back to Calgary.
Oh, well, yeah, she moved back to Gail. She took Abby and they went back.
Hey, ho.
That's me.
Good timing. Okay.